Blog Talk Radio.
We go on yet? No. On air? I guess. Hi, this is Joseph G. with the good news of 12-step recovery. Welcoming you to the Rum Radio, rumradio.org website, and the Rum Radio Internet Radio. I want to thank WNAH out of Nashville. That's Nashville, Tennessee. WNAH gives us an hour of airtime on the air as a public service presentation. They believe in the 12-step program of recovery and as a service to their customers. I want to thank Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse for helping us put this program out to their clientele and to their listeners in Nashville, in parts of Kentucky, and parts of Arkansas. So welcome to our listeners. I think you're going to get a lot out of this program. If you know of anybody who's in recovery or you can pass this on, please do. This is Joseph G. again. I want to introduce my co-host, Harold B. Harold B.'s in the family intervention program. He helps families in the county, the surrounding county here in Houston. These are troubled families with troubled children, and it's a really good work that he does. And I believe that the family is the basic unit of our social order of society. And as the family goes, so does the society. So, Harold?
Good evening, everybody, and thank you, Joseph. Thank you for the introduction, and I just want to take a minute to say to everybody that the website, rumradio.org, is all about working with others. It's all about sponsorship, how to find a sponsor, how to find a sponsee, and the things that we really need to do. Intensive work with another person is the greatest way to stay clean and sober, to stay in recovery, to move your life situation from just being sober to being in recovery. There's a big difference. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about the fact that it's not enough just to be sober. We've got to learn a new way of living, and intensive work with another person is the key to that. Joseph has been dedicated to that for a lot of years. This website doesn't make any money. It actually costs him money, but it's his way of giving back, and there's a lot of information about how to bring your recovery from just being sober to actually learning a new way of living. So we hope you'll go to the website, follow along with us, maybe call in and join the conversation tonight. We like to live in the solution, and that's what we're doing, is talking about the solution tonight, keeping our talk about the problem to a minimum, but really stay in the solution. So, Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. I'll give you the guest call-in number if you'd like to call and participate with the understanding. If you have any questions or any experiences, try to keep it on topic, but if you have something that you need to talk about, we're open to that. You know, we try to run it as AA runs it. We have no rules, and if we did have rules, we'd have exceptions to those rules, so we let God take care of us. The guest call-in number is 949 534 0621. And in New Jersey, it's 949-534-0621. It's the same number no matter where you might be. But I remember as a kid, they always had, when I lived in New York, they always had to give the New Jersey number. I think it was Bigelow 9, 5000. So remember that. Tonight we're going to work the next tradition. We've been working on the traditions. The goal of this, of the radio show right now and its programming, is sequential. And I'm taking information that's already on the website. We do some reading and understandings from that. And so eventually the whole website will be reduced to an audio format. So you can download it onto your MP3 or listen to it at your convenience. If Saturday night doesn't work for you, that's okay. You'll have an opportunity to get this information at your leisure. I heard a cute one today at the club, at the men's meeting this morning. Oh, this African-American fellow turns around and he goes, man, I've been married four times. And he said, my first wife died of mushrooms. And he said, my second wife died of mushrooms. Then he said, my third wife died of mushrooms. And of course, wise guy's on my yelled at, I see a pattern here. And then he said, but my fourth wife died of a cracked skull. She wouldn't eat the mushrooms.
That's a kindergarten joke.
I thought it was hilarious. His delivery was perfect. Perfect delivery. Because everybody's thinking this guy's a serial killer. So we're gonna be working quint. I have a quint, which is another term for five. Quint, tradition five. The short form. Each group has one primary purpose. The primary purpose, like in Star Trek, the prime directive, a primary purpose to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. The long form, each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. A spiritual entity. In and of itself, I like to think it this way. In our meetings, what we share is our experience, strength, and hope. An experience is an inventory of our past mistakes. That's how we relate to each other. Strength is the ability to lift and carry. We lift our fellows and we carry the message. That's our primary purpose. Hope is the belief that our lives will continue to improve when we do the next right thing. The next right thing is not to take that first drink of alcohol, hit a crack or whatever your favorite flavor addiction is, not to do the first one. To clean house, as suggested in the outline of the 12 steps found in our basic text, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and to always trust in God and this process that he gave us. The tradition starts out, shoemaker, stick to thy last. Better do one thing supremely well than many badly. That is the central theme of this tradition. Around it, our society gathers in unity. The very life of our fellowship requires the preservation of this principle. After the tale of a shoemaker who criticized the way an artist had drawn part of a sandal. When the artist then corrected the error, the emboldened shoemaker went on to disparage how the legs were painted, to which the artist snapped, "Let him not criticize above the sole." In other words, the cobbler was qualified to judge footwear, but only footwear. In effect, it means, shoemaker, stick to thy last. Before you criticize someone, you should walk a mile in their shoes. That way, when you criticize them, you're a mile away and you have their shoes.
Jack Handy, I love that humor. It reminds me of Stephen Wright. He said that the other night somebody snuck into his apartment, stole everything there, and replaced it with an exact replica.
That's cute.
So Jack Handy and Stephen Wright have similar sense of humor. That way you're a mile away and you have their shoes.
You have their shoes. Had you ever heard that, the full understanding of the shoemaker stick to the last?
I like that. I've been listening to a bunch of sermons from the past, and in one of them, he says that if a person is going to go to an art museum and look at great pieces of art, if they venture to give an opinion about it, they would quickly be reminded that the art isn't on trial here. They are. The art is already established as classic and something to be admired. So the same idea. We've got to stick to what we know. I often talk with people new in recovery and explain that at this point, with so much brain research, addiction and recovery really is not up to debate. The facts are in. We have scientific evidence about these things, and so it's really not a debate anymore. It's whether a person wants to grab hold of the solution and start applying that. It's action and more action.
Action and more action, for faith without works is dead.
Yes. I have a tendency these days to cut people off when they want to engage in a lengthy debate about this. There are times when I only get one chance to talk to a person, and I'm just not going to waste time debating things that are, at this point, established facts. I'd rather get to the solution and really how to apply that. Joseph?
Thank you, Hal. We carry the message, not the alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous can be likened to a group of physicians who might find a cure for cancer, and upon those concerted work would depend the answer for sufferers of this disease. True, each physician in such a group might have its own specialty. Every doctor concerned would at times wish he could devote himself to his chosen field rather than the work only with the group. But once these men had hit upon a cure, once it became apparent that only by the united effort could this be accomplished, and all of them would feel bound to devote themselves solely to the relief of cancer. In the radiance of such a miraculous discovery, any doctor would set his other ambitions aside at whatever personal cost. I have a little personal story here. I was visiting the Spring Branch group Friday last for the speaker meeting. I sought out Elaine, a friend from an old home group, and the coordinator for the meeting. I inquired of her that it had been some time since I had told my story and told her of my successes of rumradio.org, the sponsorship website. I explained that once I warmed up the crowd with my drunkalogue antics, I would be concentrating on recovery, the solution, and hope through the message of sponsorship. She said she would be glad to do that for me and also confided me that most of the ladies of her acquaintances did not sponsor. I agreed, and that it seemed to be the same with the men, that I had concluded in my guesstimation 20% of the people were doing 80% of the work. The reason I have found that once getting sober and in recovery, their lives start to change. Some married and children on the way. Children on the way. Education, so long since denied, was taking up copious amounts of time, and careers that had fell into a narrow pit have now climbed out of the deep ditch, and they were going to show the world by making up for lost time and would not waste God's precious gift of a second chance at a successful life. And, of course, some just didn't know what a sponsor was supposed to do because at the time they wanted sobriety so much they didn't matter much what their sponsor did or didn't do. Many declined instead of taking a chance and shooting blind from the hip and would prefer just to pass it off to a seasoned veteran. Elaine explained that she sponsored many women in an attempt to pick up the never-ending slack and found it to be both a privilege and a blessing, and that God always made enough time to accomplish all that she was called upon to do. Harold?
That's true. I like to work with people that are busy. They seem to get a lot more done if people have a lot of time on their hands. It's true that 20% of the people do 80% of the work. And when you were talking about a cure for cancer, something that came up in one of the recovery meetings I was in a few days ago is that kind of a cynical view that really there's so much money made in cancer treatment that this person was estimating that if there were a cure for cancer, it might be suppressed because there's so much money, so many billions that are made in cancer treatment. And it's such a cynical view, I had resistance to it. But I think maybe the same thing could be said of drug treatment, alcohol and drug treatment, that working in the counseling field, I think many years ago, we didn't really know what best practices were. We didn't have a lot of research to back up, but these days it's called evidence-based, and they've done a lot of research. They know what works, they know what doesn't work, and so I've had a chance to visit and get to know some people at other clinics and get a look at the approach that they're taking. And there are approaches that work and approaches that don't. And if I see a group working with an approach that really doesn't work, you've got to wonder two things. Either they don't want folks to get better, get on their feet and leave, or they do. And it's like a doctor. A doctor's goal is to get the patient cured and get rid of them. You know, get them out of the office. They don't want them coming back all the time. Well, that's my goal. Empower people, give them the tools that they need, and get them out and up and empowered and recovering. So I just get the thought of people holding back, not really giving their best stuff, is a repulsive idea. I don't even want to think about it. I suppose it exists, but I don't know where I'm going with the idea. I just want to make sure that everybody's giving their best stuff out there all the time. And the goal is to empower people, not to develop a dependency. We don't want to a person to change from dependency on alcohol to dependency on their sponsor. You know, that's not the idea. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. I make an observation with your thought process. You're not like that. So when you hear these cynical aberrations, it's repulsive to you because you're not able to process that. You don't understand why someone would even attempt that, and it sounds like it's counterproductive to the human condition. Sorry to say, sometimes it happens. There's a scripture in the Bible that says, money answers all questions. Did you know that? Yes, and I was real curious when I saw that, and I did some investigation to see exactly what it was saying. It had to do with this, and I have it on the website somewhere. There's a little thing on the bottom of it, a little saying. It goes, never dismiss the power of a cash bribe. literally what that scripture was saying. At that time, if you had enough money, you could buy off the centurions, you could buy off the Caesar, you could buy off the Sanhedrin, you could buy off the local magistrates, and that's what it was saying. Money answers all questions. That's what they were talking about.
Well, here in Houston, over the past 2 months, we've had some unfortunate news about hospital administrators perpetrating Medicare fraud, Medicaid fraud, and to the tune of over $100 million, and I just get depressed thinking about it.
Money is a very powerful foe.
Yes.
Well, let's continue on with this.
All right.
When women were treated as equals to men, they became superior. Just as firmly bound by obligation are the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, who have demonstrated that they can help problem drinkers as others seldom can. The unique ability of each AA to identify himself with and bring recovery to the newcomer in no way depends upon the learning, eloquence, or any special individual skills. The only thing that matters is that he is an alcoholic who has found a key to sobriety. These legacies of suffering and of recovery are easily passed among alcoholics, one to the other. This is our gift from God, and is bestowed upon others like us. Is the one aim that today animates AAs all around the globe. Continuous action, not strength or intelligence, is the key to success. AA puts it this way. An alcoholic who has made, keyword, some progress in the recovery program shares that experience on a continuous individual basis with another alcoholic who is attempting to attain or maintain sobriety through AA. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with another alcoholic. It works when other activities fail. Page 88, Big Book. Harold?
That is it. That's sort of the Rum Radio motto. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. And I'm sure you're going to go on in tonight's article and talk about what intensive means, intensive work with other alcoholics. And to me, that means working the 12 steps. So let's keep going.
Okay. Now, the other key word I think when we first started was who has made some, the word some, progress in the recovery program. Now, it doesn't really say a lot. Some is some. So I think it's important to think of that way. If someone who has one day of sobriety can help somebody who just walked through the door. Now,
I believe that. That's very important.
And intensive work means work in the steps with another alcoholic. That's sponsorship. There's another reason for the singleness of purpose. It is the great paradox of AA, that we know we can seldom keep the precious gift of sobriety unless we give it away. If a group of doctors possessed a cancer cure, they might be conscience-stricken if they failed their mission through self-seeking. Yet such a failure wouldn't jeopardize their personal survival. For us, if we neglect those who are still sick, there is an unremitting danger. Unremitting danger that our own lives and sanity under these compulsions of self-preservation, duty, and love. It is not strange that our society has concluded that it has but only one high mission: to carry the AA message to those who don't know there's a way out. They grope in the dark without light, and he maketh them to stagger like a drunken man. Until we have spoken to complete candor with someone and they have done the same with us, they still didn't belong. Step five was the answer. It was the beginning of the true kinship between God and man. Step five from the 12 and 12. Therefore, not only do we have to do a fifth step, we have to hear a fifth step. And until then, we still didn't belong. Harold?
That is so important. It's, I had a wonderful sponsor, and he helped me work the steps. He heard my fifth step, and then as I continued in recovery, I got sponsees. I heard their fifth steps, and it really is true. We really don't belong until we've given our fifth step, and until we've received a fifth step from someone else. That's very important, and we need that sense of belonging in order to recover. So that's that's the key. Getting with somebody else, working the steps, that's the key to the whole thing. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. I had an epiphany the other day. Did I tell you? I think this is good for me. I talked to another fella. He wasn't quite sure, but it left it up for grabs. Usually when I lose a sponsee, it seems inevitably it's around step six. We've worked five, and now they stall on six. And, of course, step six tells us this is the step that separates the men from the boys, the women from the girls, fox from the hounds, the sheep from the goats, etc. It's a hard step. At first blush, step six doesn't look like much. There really is not a lot to it. Became entirely ready to turn our will and our become entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Right. So there's not much to it. You could cover six and seven in the big book with the palm of your hand. You know what I realized though? You tell me what you think. That after we've done step five, right, it's the beginning of the true tip, beginning of the true kinship between God and man. So we're starting our true relationship with God. At that point, after we work step five, most of the pain, if not all of the pain, is gone. The pain is gone. Step five, we're done. The pain is gone, we're going to meetings, and now step six. And that's where I find my sponsees usually falling out on me. The motivation to continue the steps aren't there because the pain is gone. The pain is dissipated, and unless they really want to dig in their heels and make a concerted effort, that's what separates the men from the boys, step six goes wanting. And I bet you if you surveyed around all of the program, I bet you'd find a commonality with that understanding.
Interesting.
What do you think?
That's, you know, that hasn't been my experience, but I hear that it is yours, and that step six was a very difficult, puzzling thing for me personally as I went through the steps. I couldn't imagine even why it was there. I mean, at first I thought, why wouldn't a person be entirely ready to have their defects of character removed? I mean, why wouldn't that just automatically, why does that need to be a step? Why isn't it just automatic? And after a lot of deliberation, I realized that the reason I wasn't entirely ready to have it removed is because I was still using some of these defects of characters. Like my list of defects at the end of step four and step five, if it's in what I've seen, if it's really done well, done correctly, we end up with a list of half a dozen defects. And on my list was procrastination, self-pity, confusion, which is a self-defense mechanism. So I thought self-pity, for example. Why wouldn't I be entirely ready to have self-pity removed? Well, I was still using self-pity. And if I'm using it, God's not going to remove it. He won't take something from me I'm still using. So that is the key to six. And so maybe other people have been through that same struggle. It's so brief and concise, and somehow maybe that makes it more difficult. But there's a real beauty in the steps, and deciding to quit using these defects has been a big job. I think in someplace in the book I read that they do 5, 6, and 7 right there on their knees in one evening. So, what do you think, Joseph?
Now, interesting. I know it's probably a little bit of both. My experience is six. Yours is a little different. So I'm sure it's part of both of them. We don't want to give up our character defects because we're still using them. They could be survival techniques that we've used. It's how we identify ourselves. But I still believe that we're willing to do all this if we're in enough pain, and then we have to do this to get out of the pain. And I believe once the pain is gone, so is the motivation. Pain is fuel. Okay, let's get back to the tradition.
Yes.
Restless, one day I felt it better to do some 12-step work. Maybe I should take out some insurance against the slip. But first, I'd have to take a drunk to work. Oh, let me get highlighting the wisdom of an AA single purpose. A member tells the story. Restless one day, I felt I'd better do some 12-step work. Maybe I should take out some insurance against the slip. But first, I'd have to find a drunk to work on. So I hopped the subway to Towns Hospital. That was the Mecca back then where you found your drunks. Everybody found their drunks at Towns Hospital. They should have had a sign up there. Drunks for Rent, Towns Hospital, where I asked Dr. Silkworth if I had a prospect. Nothing too promising, the little doc said. There's just one chap on the third floor who might be a possibility, but he's an awfully tough Irishman. I never saw a man so obstinate. He shouts that his partner would treat him better and his wife would leave him alone. He'd soon solve his alcohol problem. He'd had a bad case of the DTs. He's pretty foggy and he's very suspicious of everybody. Doesn't sound too good, does it? But working with him may do something for you. So why don't you have a go at it? The Irish are not tough as you might think, so put up your dukes and prepare to feel my booted grogan on the seat of your pants. And if all else fails, It's a shillelagh to the noggin. Nothing is likely to help a person overcome or endure troubles than to bring comfort and hope to another. I can go to Skid Row that I already know, and like Bob and Bill, there's always the hospital. Now I hear tell they come in under their own steam, washed but not clean, and desperate for simple instruction. Next time this golden opportunity walks through the door, I will elbow and shove and help them find their seats so that I can continue to grow and make my own recovery complete. I was soon sitting beside a big hulk of a man, decidedly unfriendly. He stared at me out of eyes which were slits in the red and swollen face. I had agreed with the doctor. He certainly didn't look good. But I told him my own story. I explained what a wonderful fellowship we had, how well we understood each other. I bore down hard on the hopelessness of drunks' dilemma. I insisted that few drunks could ever get well in their own steam. But that in our groups, we could do together what we could not do separately. He interrupted to scoff at this and asserted he'd fix his wife. He'd fix his wife. Ah, if I could only fix my wife, his partner, and his alcoholism by himself. I can do it. Sarcastically asked, how much does this your scheme cost? I was thankful I could tell him nothing at all. His next question, well, what are you getting out of it? What's in it for you? He wants to know. Of course, my answer was my own sobriety and a mighty happy life. Bill Dubious, he demands, did you really mean the only reason you're here is to try to help me and to help yourself? Yes, I said. That's absolutely all there is to it. There's no angle. In the end, it's just one drunk talking to another. Why not tell his alcoholics about the illness? They condemn them to go mad or die if they continue to drink. Coming from another alcoholic, one alcoholic talking to another, maybe that will crack those tough egos deep down, Silkworth said. Once again, the doctor had put his finger on the idea that would be absolutely essential in carrying the AA message, the power of one alcoholic talking to another. What's your angle? I asked, trying to sound more playful than demanding. Isosceles, Jack quipped. I think that's right to the point. Did you get that?
No.
What's your angle? I asked, trying to sound more playful than demanding. Isosceles, Jack quipped. I think that's right to the point. And it's like a math joke. Yeah. And
there you go. All right, a geometry joke. Yeah, I'm a little slow on the draw.
It's a right angle, right to the point.
Right to the point, a right angle. Oh, man.
Then hesitantly, I ventured to talk about the spiritual side of our program. What a freeze that drunk gave me. I'd no sooner got the word spiritual out of my mouth than he pounced. Oh, he said, now I get it. You're proselyting for some damn religious sect or other. Where do you get the no angle stuff? I belong to a great church. That means everything to me. You got your nerve to come here talking religion. You have good people doing good things and evil people doing bad things. But for good people to do bad things, it takes religion. Steven Weinberg. You want me to say that again? You have good
that is excellent. It's really true, unfortunately.
You have good people doing good things and evil people doing bad things. But for good people to do bad things, it takes religion. Religion was for people who didn't want to go to hell. Spirituality was for the people who had already been there. Religion is like Baskin-Robbins ice cream. Once you've picked your favorite flavor, nothing else seems as satisfying. Thank heaven I came up with the right answer for that one. It wasn't based four square on the single-purpose AA, You have faith, I said, perhaps far deeper faith than mine. No doubt you're better taught in religious matters than I, so I can't tell you anything about religion. I don't want to try. I'll bet, too, that you could give me a letter-perfect definition of humility. But from what you've told me about yourself and your problems and how you propose to lift them, I think I know what's wrong. Okay, he said. Give me the business. Well, said I think you're just a conceited Irishman who thinks he can run the whole show. Four square, marked by firm, unwavering conviction or expression, forthright. Humility was like underwear. Necessary, unless it's seen, then it becomes indecent. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. We usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of the self-will without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying it on our own power. We had to have God's help. Whosoever diggeth a pit shall fall therein, and he that rolleth the stone, it will return upon him. Harold?
Yes, this is really the key. I think the most important concept in the whole book is found on page 45 there in the middle, where it says, selfishness and self-centeredness are the root of our problem. Alcohol is but a symptom. Selfishness and self-centeredness are the root of our problem. Alcohol is but a symptom. And that is the key. The steps, I think, are solutions to getting rid of that selfishness and self-centeredness. And that indeed is why sobriety is not enough. Just going to meetings is not enough, but it requires service work and especially intensive work with another alcoholic. That's how we get over that selfishness and self-centeredness. Even if people stop drinking completely, that is not the total answer. We've got to work the steps. We've got to get over that horrible selfishness. I was talking with a young lady this afternoon at the beginning of her entire process, and she talked about some of the pain in her life, both as a little girl and as a young woman. And they were examples of selfishness and self-centeredness. And she's beginning to understand the connections there. And again, I keep in mind that if I never get to talk to her again, at least I've planted that seed that it's really all about selfishness and self-centeredness. And what's been perpetrated against her, if she's going to recover from that and do some productive things, it'll be because she overcomes her own selfishness and self-centeredness. I think the wheels are beginning to turn, and that's our only hope. That's where recovery begins, when we consider the possibility that when we keep a corner of our minds open to the idea that we can get over that, we can overcome that. And then another idea that I touched upon this afternoon was the fact that God can do for us what we can't do for ourselves. I really don't think we can get rid of that selfishness. But like we said a minute ago in step six, we can become entirely ready to have God remove these defects, and step seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. This really rocked him, but he calmed down. He began to listen while I tried to show him that humility was the main key to sobriety. Finally, he saw that I wasn't attempting to change his religious views, that he wanted him to find the grace in his own religion that would aid his recovery, for there was one, for there on we got along fine. Last evening, a newcomer named Kevin engaged Glenn and I in a pity party conversation in the half-measure smoking area, and how his life was fearful and fraught with hopelessness. I listened intently with young Kevin's rationalizations, justifications, and minimization. I asked if he had the big book that he claimed to be in possession of. Alas, no. Did he have a sponsor? Again, no. As he could not find quite the right fit, and to make matters worse, he was perplexed by confusing and contradictory opinions overheard in meetings. Kevin confided that his first 30 days he had hope, but slowly it had eroded. Kevin started to go on how it didn't work. Enough is a little less than too much when you're digging out of a ditch. I asked Kevin if I could make an observation. I told him that he missed his window of opportunity. In his first 30 days to get a sponsor and start working the steps, that he didn't know what the blank he was talking about, as he didn't read the big book or work the steps, that he was lazy and didn't want to do the necessary work, and that he didn't have what it takes to attain and maintain long-term sobriety, and that he was wasting his time here, that he might as well give up and go home. I left to catch the end of the meeting. On the way out, Jeff, a very large fellow whom I had given a tongue lashing several days before, had shook my hand and said brutal honesty and called over to Kevin and said, "He loves you, you just don't know it." Yet I was called on to share even before I found my chair and inquired as to the topic. There was none. What is ever on your mind? Okay, fine, and went on about the most recent occurrence. As I concluded speaking, Kevin and Glenn walked in, and Kevin shared for a moment after a meeting. After the meeting, I gave out rumradio.org business cards, and Kevin asked me if he could have one. Certainly, I responded. Then he asked if I would be his sponsor. And then I asked him the two leading questions. Have you had enough? That's a yes or a no. And are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no. Both were answered in the affirmative, and I directed him to Clancy's seven questions to be answered by and returned by the following day. Glenn sat in the back. On his face was affixed a wiry grin that said it all. Harold?
That's a wonderful paragraph with lots of meat there. Those two questions, have you had enough and are you ready to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Fantastic questions, very important questions. And you and I have talked before about just how important those questions are. And then Clancy's seven questions, we'll have to have a program and go through those. That would make a great topic, wouldn't it?
Yes, they're fairly brief. They're not meant to do. It's not a fourth step. You know, you're not doing a fourth step right there. But it's sort of like a little minimal fourth step. It can be done. I don't need War and Peace from any of these guys. What I'm looking for when I give them Clancy's Seven Questions is their willingness to confirm what they told me. So I'll even do this. Before the meeting closes, we usually circle up and we hold hands, and a lot of groups have a prayer. Some don't, some do, but most do. Or it's serenity prayer, third step prayer, the Our Fathers are fairly common in this neck of the woods. Some places don't, whatever, but usually there's some kind of benediction to the end of the meeting, and we gather in a circle. And usually if I'm looking for a sponsee, I'll place myself next to the man who just got his beginner's chip. You know why I do that, Harold?
So you can talk afterwards.
Immediately. I'm holding this guy's hand already. I'm holding this guy's hand. He got his beginner's chip, and he's hot. The beginner's chip, it's also called a desire's chip. It's an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life for 24 hours. Not drinking for 24 hours. Are there any takers? So he gets up, and he's finally made that decision. And I believe when he gets up and gets that chip and he mentions his name, and I think that's really important. A lot of folks in this neck of the woods miss that. If he says his name and says that he's an alcoholic, he's affirmed the first step. He's admitted that alcoholism is a foe and that his life is unmanageable. Right? Would you agree?
Oh, yes. That's in a very important moment. It's so great to draw the person out, find out more about them, talk to them, let them talk a little bit, and help them get a book and help them get some phone numbers and really help them feel welcome, help them feel that sense of belonging. People did it for me, and I owe my life to that whole process, really. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. And so I feel this is the guy's hot now. He's hot, ready to go. He's made that decision, and then when I ask him these questions, and if I get the two, and now sometimes I don't. They'll hem and haw. If I ever get a hem and haw on it, I know 9 times out of 10, my experience is they're not going to follow through with the assignment. And I've had people say, and I've asked them, "Have you had enough?" And they'll go, "No, not yet." I said, "Okay, that's fine. Well, you just keep coming back." He's not ready yet. I can't
right.
make him ready. I can't make him ready. I'd like to. I'd like to slap him upside the head, but I can't. I can't put something there he didn't bottom yet. Bottom is a big deal. You know, a lot of times people come into the program that have not bottomed. They're coming there. You know, they can see the bottom coming up, but they figured, well, this is a way to soften the landing. So they haven't bottomed yet. So they're really not in that state of desperation. They don't have a broken heart and the contrite spirit yet.
Yeah, the idea that they can drink like normal people has to be smashed. And they haven't smashed that idea. And you and I have talked about it before. I actually tell folks, go on out, try to do some more controlled drinking, and see how that goes. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. So if I get a firm, you know, I'll continue on with them to a certain degree, even if I can't get at least if I can get, it's a yes, and then I'll say, look, I need a yes or a no. Because I believe when I'm asking these questions, not only is he telling me, subconsciously, he's saying it to himself. He's saying,
oh, yes.
He's making the commitment. His his subconscious is recording this information. And then he has the playback now in his consciousness. Yeah, I committed to go to any length. Yeah, and I said I've had enough. So this is an inside job. Okay, then I said, and then I tell them when they said that, the first thing we sell in AA, you know what we sell? You know what we're merchants of?
Hope.
We're hope. Thank you. We're hope merchants. We sell hope. We give hope away. I like to think of a sale because in the beginning they used to call these guys prospects, which is a sales term. So we give hope. We sell them hope. This is a, you know, I believe when two people sit down and have a conversation, there's a sale going on. Why should you listen to me and take your time to do that? I'm selling the idea that I have something important to say. We're selling him hope. He's got hope. Look, you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit. But there's certain things that you have to do. And the first thing you need
freedom,
to do...
Freedom isn't free.
Certain things that you have to do. I'm not doing this for you. There's certain things you have to do. And the first thing I need you to do is answer these seven questions. And I give them Clancy seven questions. They're great little questions. We'll go over them another time. But, I said, and this is the kicker. Okay. I need these answered, and I need them back tomorrow. Not a week from tomorrow, not a day after tomorrow. I need them tomorrow. Is that understood? Here, this, I have my, you know, the Rum Radio sobriety cards. I give him a card. You just give him your phone number and say, you don't even have, if you want, you could take his number, but I recommend that you just give him your number. If he's not interested in enough to give you a call, calling him will not do anybody any good.
I agree totally.
Now he calls or he doesn't call, and that answers that question. There's no calling him and, you know, what happened, or the next time you see him at the meeting. Usually when I do that and the guys don't fly, and I've had several lately, as a matter of fact, I've had a string of three lately that wanted me to be their sponsor. I gave them I didn't have the with me, and I direct them to the website. I ask them, do you have access to the web? And yes, I do. And I tell them where they can find it on the website. And I didn't hear last three people. I haven't heard back. So
you asked them to look up Clancy Seven Questions on the web, on your website.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me finish this, and then I'll look up Clancy. We got a few minutes. We don't have enough time really to go over it right now. Yeah, it's under.
We've got down to two minutes. It's been a great program. I like it.
Thank you. It's under the How to Find the Sponsee tab.
Okay.
If you go to How to Find the Sponsee, you scroll down a little ways, and it gives you the whole outline of how to find the sponsee. All the suggested ways to find a sponsee. Okay, let me finish this up while we still have a few minutes. Now concludes the old timer. Suppose I had been obliged to talk to this man on religious grounds. Suppose my answer had to be that AA needed a lot of money, that AA went in for education, hospital, and rehabilitation. Suppose I'd suggested that I take a hand in this domestic and business affairs. Where would we have wound up? No place, of course. Mark Twain, get your facts first, then you can distort them as you please. It ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so. That's Mark Twain also. Years later, this tough Irish customer liked to say, my sponsor sold me on the My sponsor sold me on the idea, and that was sobriety. At the time, I couldn't have bought anything else. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help others to achieve sobriety. Harold?
Fantastic program tonight. I think we've really touched on the key, and it's intensive work with another alcoholic. So that uses up our time. We're done.
I think, yeah. Thank you for the folks in Nashville. I think we just went off the air. Thanks, Harold, for your time. And like usual, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org.
Good night.
Good night.